Unfortunately, we pick up from where we left off last year. Unfortunately, we're back again for another Tisha B'Av on the floor. Another Tisha B'Av without the Beis HaMikdash. We have the sugyas in the fifth parak of Gittin that speak to the reasons for the story, the backstory behind various korbanos of Klal Yisrael. And presumably, Rambam reminds us, particularly in his introduction to Perek Chelek, that the same brilliant, nuanced, sophisticated Chachamim who wrote the halachic sugyas, or the brilliant, sophisticated, nuanced Chachamim who gave us the sugyas of Agadata. And so this, with the same eye for depth, which we approach the halachic sugyas, is with that sort of eye for depth that we're meant to approach the sugyas of Agada as well. So the Gemara is telling us stories. These are not just stories of historical interest. Obviously, they're stories that are meant to tell us not only the how, but the why. So let's spend a little time now. I believe last year we had a chance to see the opening of this Gemara. The Gemara tells the story of Kamsa bar Kamsa. The Gemara speaks to... The type of hatred and the type of enmity that existed among Klal Yisrael. The Gemara tells us elsewhere that the Sinas Chinam was the driver of the Churban Bayis Sheni. And that sin is chinam on the national level. There was a tremendous amount of sectarian partisanship, and a tremendous amount of backstabbing. But the Gemara begins with a story of personal hatred, and of a fellow who was friends with a kamtza and an enemy of a bar kamtza, and was willing to publicly shame him. And drove this bar kamtza in publicly shamed, despite his attempts to save face, to snap back by traveling all the way to Rome to induce the Roman emperor, to convince the Roman emperor that the mor debach yudai, that the Jews hate you, and the Jews don't accept you, and induced, as we well know, induces the Roman emperor to try a test, to try an experiment, send an animal with me. You'll see that they won't. You'll see that the Jews won't bring it as a carbon. And then the Gemara picks up. Let's pick up around a third of the way down. Nun vav amud alef maseches Gittin. The Gemara then picks up with the next leg of the story, beyond Kamtza or Bar Kamtza. Now things are out of the hands of Bar Kamtza. The Romans have come. Iluhu l'Aspanius Kesar. The previous general had left, and they bring Vespasian, who would be king, to be the general. It's around 8-10 lines down in the wide lines in the Vav Amud Aleph. And Sarah Latlashni, this Vespasian sets siege Yerushalayim for a period of 3 years. Havu b'hano talasa asiri. There were three very, very wealthy men. Fabulously wealthy Jews in the city of Yerushalayim. The Gemara gives us their names. The Gemara gives us a sense of who they were. One was Nakdil ben Gurion. One was ben Kalva Savua. One was ben Tzitzis HaKesas. So before we get a sense of what would happen, we first get a sense of who these characters are. The Gemara tells us Nakdil ben Gurion was named for something incredible. Shenakta Lochama Avuro. The Kadosh Baruch Hu had the son wait for him. Elsewhere, the Gemara tells us a story, Maseches Tanis, that in an earlier era he had put a tremendous amount of wealth on the line for Klal Yisrael. There was a lack of water, and he was willing to pay enormous amounts of money to a Roman official, and he had put it all on the line, and then he had made a deal with him that he would the water that he had taken from this Roman official, his water reserves that he had bought for the Ole Regel. See, this is in the days of the Shanim Kitikunim, there were Ole Regel. So he had promised him he'd have it back from him by a certain date, and if not, here's what's going to happen. And he had been davening, and davening is one of the stories in the series of stories of HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepting tefillos for rain, where this fellow is Nachum Ben Gurion is davening, and finally HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings back the sun so that the rain will have fallen at a point that was before the deadline. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu did incredible nisim with this Nachum Ben Gurion, so much so that he was named for those nisim. Nachum Ben Gurion, he was named for the tefillos that his tefillos which were miraculously accepted on behalf of the Olei Regel. Ben Kalba Savua, why was he called Ben Kalba Savua, the dog who satiated? You can walk into his house as hungry as a dog. Apparently dogs get very hungry, not sure. Probably not a dog owner. Apparently dogs get very hungry. And you can walk in as hungry as a dog and you walk out incredibly full. He was a man, Nachum Ben Gurion was a man of extraordinary tefillah. And Ben Kalba was a man who excelled in Hachnosas Archim. And finally, Ben Tzitzis HaKesas, well, why is that his name? Shahaisa Tzisaso Nigreres Agabe Kesasos. The Tzitzis, Rashi Zivistalis, his Tzitzis, what we call Tzitzis, it would drag on Kesasos. He everywhere he went, they roll out the red carpet thing. Or roll out, as Rashi says, the silk carpet. His Tzitzis didn't drag on the ground. His Tzitzis dragged. Even his tzitzis only dragged upon finest cloth, the silk carpets. Or alternatively, ikeda armi shaitza kesto mutalas ben gedoli romi. That his seat, he found his seat among the Roman nobility. And the reason why the Gemara is telling us this, presumably, is to give us a sense of the before and after. You appreciate, like we were talking before in advance of Kinos, You appreciate loss that much more when you realize with what that gap used to be filled. We're talking about people who were Nachum Ben Gurion. We're talking about someone whose tefillos were answered with great nisim, tefillos for rain. It was rain to provide for the Ole Regel, which we're about to lose. And we're talking about the most extraordinary level of Hachnosas Archim, of people being hungry and being satiated. We're talking about people who lived with a great wealth. And the coming contrast is that much more dramatic. The Gemara says these fabulously wealthy people were prepared to carry Yerushalayim financially for decades. Chad Amar, they're under siege. Chad Amar Luhu, Anoz Zayin Luhu Bechitu Sai. One of these three wealthy men said, I'll cover Yerushalayim in terms of food, in terms of wheat and barley. I've got the needs in terms of wine and salt, mishkan, oil. One says, "Bidetzivi, I have it. I have Klal Yisrael, and I have the Jewish community of Yerushalayim covered in terms of tzivi, in terms of firewood." And the Gemara says, as an aside, as a footnote, don't think that the firewood is a small thing. Energy needs are very significant. That's essentially what firewood is. This is what provided heat and light and cooking. To make bread, so you're going to need one measure of wheat and potentially 60 measures of wood. Between the three of them, they're ready to cover the basic needs of Yerushalayim for 21 years. It had been 3 years of siege. They said, no problem. We're ready for another seven times as much. And this is the background to what's about to happen. This is the second stage in the story of the Kamsa Bar Kamsa. Hava Bahu Hano Bar Yoni. There was a group of radicals, and they disagreed with the Rabbanim in terms of how to grapple, how to deal diplomatically with the Romans. Amalu Rabbanan, the Chachamim of Sanhedrin said, Nepuk v'navet shlama b'hadayu. The Romans have the upper hand, At this point, it's foolish to try to fight. We're under siege. There's nothing we can do. At the moment, our best approach is to seek to negotiate. Let's go out and let's try to negotiate some sort of peace agreement with the Romans. Lo shavkinu, the Baryoni, these radicals, did not allow the Rabbanim to go out. They wouldn't allow it. Amr Luhu, the Baryoni said, Nepuk v'nabrikrova ba'adayu. Let's fight. Amr Luhu Rabbanim lo mistaya milsa. Racham said, under some circumstances, it makes sense to fight. But right now, if you look at it rationally, we're not set up for success. Kamu kalanu lahano amberi. Dechiti usari. Behava kafna. So these Baryoni wanted to force the issue. They didn't want to allow the Rabbanim to convince the people that we need to hold out, we need to negotiate. So what did they do? They cut off their nose to spite their face. They set fire to those storehouses of 21 years worth of wheat and barley, and then they made the famine come very quickly. The Chachamim were ready to just sit and wait. To fight, the Chacham said, we don't have the wherewithal to fight, but we can wait. We can play the waiting game. We can wait here for 20 years. The Romans aren't going to wait for 20 years. Sooner or later, they'll give up. They'll give up interest. They'll move on to some other conquest. But the Baryoni didn't want. The Baryoni wanted war. And that's why they were forcing, that's why they forced the issue. Hagabi Atzmechem. Mentioned before that on one level, the sin of chinam was personal. And that's the first stage of the story. The Kamtzer Bar Kamtzer, individual people who are being so incredibly nasty to another. But it wasn't only individual people. It was also sectarian partisanship of the worst sort. What idiocy to mamish causes starvation and death of tens if not hundreds of thousands of Jews. Kamu kalanu. They burnt the storehouses. These Jews were so Meshugan l'davar echad, and such a lack of respect for Talmid Chachamim, they entirely lost their way. They thought they were in service of an ideal. Kamu kalanu no amri dechit v'sari. They burnt the storehouses and they directly caused the starvation of innumerable Jews. The Hava Kafna immediately, in addition to all the death and destruction that would result indirectly from the sack of Yerushalayim at the hands of the Romans. And the Gemara and the Gemara tells a story, a painful story, of the type of famine that resulted from the destruction of these storehouses. Marta Bas Baisus, Martha, a Jewish woman named Martha, was the daughter of Baisus. She appears elsewhere, I believe, in the Masechet Tanis as well. Asirasa Yerushalayim Havya. She was among the richest women in Yerushalayim. And she did not know what had happened, it sounds like. She didn't know that everything was gone. She's ensconced in her own gilded tower. Shadartu L'shlucha, she sends one of the agents out to go shopping. Amar la zilai salismida. Bring me the finest flour. Da'ozel is daven. By the time the fellow gets to market, the smida, the finest flour, is gone. The famine is on. Asa amala smida leka bechibrasa ikam. A grade A flour is gone, but I can still get you white flour. So she says, good, zil isili, go get that. Da'ozel is daven. He gets to the market a second time, that's gone too. Comes back and says, chibrasa leka begushkura ikam. I can't get you white flour, but I can get you, it sounds like, a whole wheat flour, which at the time was seen to be a lesser status. Zilaisili, again and again and again. Every time he goes and it's gone, he comes back, he says, I'll get you kimcha desai, I'll get you barley flour. And finally she said, it's all gone. And he had no way of texting her in real time. So it was a back and a forth and a back and a forth. And again, the Gemara has given us a sense of how, in the story, of how incredibly rapid the decline was. That moment of Kamu Kalanhu, of the destruction of these storehouses, was a frightening tipping point. We were in steady state. We could have lasted for 21 years. Then all of a sudden things, the sin that you see, B'moei Naim, how the sin has chinam on a tzibur level change things so rapidly. We passed the cusp, we passed the inflection point, and now we were like a roller coaster headed down at an alarmingly rapid rate. One thing is disappearing after another, after another, after another. She can't even keep up with it. And she walks outside. Avashlifa Masana. Her shoes were off. She said, let me go out and see. May I find something to eat? And she, something gets stuck in her foot and she dies. And Kari Allah Rabban Yochan ben Zakkai, Haraka Bechava Hanuga. Yochan ben Zakkai said, look at this woman. And the incredibly rapid decline of Kali Yisrael captured, and the incredibly rapid and painful and tragic decline and death of this woman. That's one of the psukim of Tokacha. The Chumash tells us someone who is so pampered and so soft and led such a insulated life. Her foot never even stepped on the ground, and now, literally, her foot steps on the ground, it hits a pebble, and that's the end of her. And then there are other versions of what it was that happened to her. Maybe it wasn't what she stepped on, but maybe it's what she ate. Ikad Amri Grogroster of Tzadak Achla, this Nisa, Umesa. Maybe it was that she had eaten the dates of Rabbi Tzadak, and that's what had been so overwhelmingly vile to her. And she died from the experience. She was dying of hunger. She was willing to eat anything, and then she actually tried it, and she died from the experience. The Gemara says, "Well, what are the dates of Rabbi Tzadok?" Gemara tells the story. Rabbi Tzadok sits for 40 years, but the last 40 years, from the year 30 or so till the year 70, the Beis Hamikdash was Nechrab around the year 70, 68, 69, 70. Rashi and Tosis discuss the exact timing. The last 40 years, he had been in Betanis, the Lech of Yishalayim. They understood that things were, they saw this decades, that many decades in advance. Well, it tells us that decades in advance, the Sanhedrin already had moved out. But this was, this has been a long, slow decline. The high point had been around halfway through the period of Bayi Sheni, after we had had a Bayi Sheni but had not been free. We built the Bayi Sheni as subjects of the Persian Empire. Koresh, Cyrus the Great, had given Ezra and the Jewish people the right to return to Yerushalayim to build Beis HaMikdash as, not as a sovereign people, but as a respected colony of the Persian Empire. And we had begun the period of Bayi Sheni as part of the Persian Empire. And with the rise of Alexander the Great, he takes over. And that leads to the breakdown of Alexander's empire, puts us in the hands of the Syrian Greeks, who we refer to as Yevanim. And ultimately leads to Antiochus and the revolt of the Hashmonaim. The revolt of the Hashmonaim, as the Gemara points out, was the return of not only of our freedom to practice Yahadus in Eretz Israel, but our freedom, sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. This first time that we had been a sovereign people in Eretz Yisrael since near the end of the Bayis Rishon, since the days of Yoshiyahu. It was returned only in the days of Hashmonaim. And that had been an incredible high point. But then after that, things began to dwindle again. And the great-great-grandchildren of the Hashmonaim, Hyrcanus Aristobulus, there was such sinas chinam, such sinas achim, to the point where one brother is in charge of Yerushalayim, and the other brother sets siege because he wants to conquer Yerushalayim from his brother, and he invites the one on the outside, the brother on the outside, invites the Romans to help him. And that is, Chazal pointed out, that's the introduction of the Romans into Yerushalayim, and that was the beginning of the end. The Romans had been around Yerushalayim long before the fall of Beis HaMikdash. And already 40 years, many years into this, but 40 years before Korban Bayis, Rabbi Tzadok already realized that we're in danger of total destruction. We're in danger of total collapse under the weight of Roman rule. And he began to fast. And the Gemara says he fasted for 40 years. He became so emaciated. If you'd eat anything, you could watch the food going down his neck. He was that emaciated. thinking about those pictures we've seen of emaciated survivors of the camps.
It's comparable almost to the story before, because you have the Tzadok and the Chachamim are able to see reality as it is, whereas Marta and the Biryonim, while one is violent and one is not, they're not seeing things.
That's a good point.
In this alternate
reality.
Yeah.
Right. That's an interesting connection between the Bar Yoni and Marta. Right. In different ways, they had very, very different tastes. Marta was living at large. The Bar Yoni wanted war. But you're right. What they shared was a lack of realism and a lack of a capacity to see things as they are. Right. And the Bar Yoni don't recognize that the Chachamim see what they don't see. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in parallel, looks at the story of Marta and says, hey, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us this would happen 1,500 years ago. It's already a pasuk in the Chumash. Pasuk in the Chumash she didn't appreciate. It may also captures the significance of she was eating these, she couldn't handle what Rabbi Tzadok had. Rabbi Tzadok, the Gemara says, he would suck on dates. He couldn't even swallow them necessarily. He would suck on the dates. Mayitz mayayu v'shadu luhu. He would suck the juice out of the date and throw the rest away. That second version, what happens to her, that she comes across one of these dates, and she's so starved that she takes one and eats them, but she can't handle it. She's so repulsed. She needs the food desperately, but she's so repulsed by what she's eating that she passes away. And then, and what you're saying, Michael, in terms of perspective, you have a kanicha nafsha, piktachal dahab of a chaspa. She's dying. Actually, she didn't die on the spot, but she's dying. And she takes all of her money, she throws in the street. Hai lamaimi baili. What do I need this for? A pasuk, kaspan bachutzos yesh lichu. And it captures also what you're saying about her, that in her final moments, lahavda, a little bit like the death of Ivan Ilyich, in her final moment, she suddenly realizes she has a moment of clarity. She realizes, I was so caught up in my money, but in the end, how does it help me? In the end, how does it help me? But she realized too late. Abba Sakra. Then the Gemara talks, and now we mentioned Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in passing. You haven't heard of him yet. He mentioned him in passing. He's the one who's commenting, giving a Torah perspective on this, on the story of Marta, but he's about to take center stage. Abba Sakra, Reish Bar Yoni Yerushalayim. We mentioned the Bar Yonim, the leader of this gang, the leader of this group, this violent faction. His name was Abba Sakra. He had two types of yichus. One was that he was the leader of the Bar Yoni Yerushalayim. The other yichus, that his mother, his grandfather was Zakkai. His mother had been Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's sister. They spoke before about their Bayonin that we listen to Rabbanim. They were related. So it perhaps brings back memories in an earlier generation of the story in the seventh parak of Brachas, the Yanai who had massacred all the Rabbanim, the mad king, was a descendant of Chashmonaim, was a brother-in-law of Shimon ben Shetach, the Nasi. So here, once again, different types of Jewish leadership, they were related in a certain profoundly ironic way. So the head of the Bar Yoni is a nephew of Yochanan Zakkai. Havashalach le. Yochanan Zakkai sends him a message. We need to talk. Tal pitzino l'gaboy. Come to me now. The open conversation is breaking down. So he says, let's have some back channel discussion. Just you and I. Don't come with your chaver. Just come yourself. No one will know. Come to my house. Asa, and he did come. Abba Sakra comes to Uncle Yochanan. Uncle Rabban Yochanan. What are you doing? He says, how much don't you realize what you're doing is so profoundly counterproductive? Can't begin to describe. You're starving the city to death. You think you're saving the Jewish people. Forget about the Romans. They're just going to starve to death. Why? What's the game plan? And the language is interesting. He doesn't say why. He said, Ad Amos. For how much longer do you plan to do this? In other words, tachlis, what's the plan? What's the plan? What's the next step? And his response is, my avid, well, what do you want me to do? The iaminu lahu midi katalole. If I say, he says, I'm not even, you think I'm in charge. I'm just a figurehead at this point. I can't actually tell my chever what to do. If I tell them I need to stand down, they'll just kill me too. The mob has taken over. I'm not in charge. So Yochum Ezakai says, in that case, chazili takantil didi, then you need to figure, in that case, I'll take matters into my own hands. You can at least play a supporting role. You can at least enable me to try to fix things up. Chazili takantil didi, you help me figure out how the apok. You need to smuggle me out of the city. After the hava hatzala porta, maybe we can have a minor hatzala. So Abba Sakri says that much I can help you with. Nekod nafshe b'ktiri. So let the word out that you're sick. Pretend to be sick. And keep the charade up for a while. People should come. They should bring back. Achola really played the part. And then I see Midi Saria bring something decaying, the Agni Gabach, put a piece of rotten meat next to you, for Lamer enough Nafshach. Then they can let the word out that you're dead, and the smell will corroborate that. And now, here's you gotta be careful. The only people who should come in once you're pretending to be dead are your own Talmidim. Don't let anyone else come in. They'll live Shambach. Otherwise, they'll notice when they carry you out. The kolulat. People who are carrying will notice that you're still alive because you'll feel lighter. You won't be dead weight. Inu yadi dechaye kolul mimisa. So he says that. So here's the plan. Here's what you're going to do. So you'll pretend to be sick. You'll pretend to die. Your talmid will carry you out. And this part of the story, you're probably very familiar with. That's exactly what happens. The next generation. The generation of Yavne were his Talmidim. Rabbi Eliezer on the one side, Rabbi Yeshua on the other side, and they're carrying him out. They get to the gate to Yerushalayim. And Bar Lemidkere, the Bar Yonah, who were standing guard, they wanted to stab him. Let's make sure that he's really dead. And they said, really? Amr Lahu. So Rabbi Eliezer and Yeshua say, Yomru Rabban Daknu. They're going to say that they stabbed their own rabbi. They're going to say, Rashi points out, we're going to, the goal is to carry out his corpse and bury him outside. The Romans may take a look. And how are we going to explain that the leader of the Jewish people was stabbed, obviously, by his own people? What a design. They said, let's shove the body a little bit to see that it's dead. They said, what? So how are you going to explain that? Yomer rabban dachfu. So finally they let them out. Pasul baba. And then they get out, and then once they're out of eyeshot, obviously Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai leaps off of the stretcher. And Kimata Lahasam, they get to the Roman garrison. He says, Shlomo Lach Malka, Shlomo Lach Malka, peace upon you, Caesar. That's how he addresses the general. So Vespasian says, Mechaibis Trei Katla, it's a double capital crime. He says, Mimanoshach, Lamdam. This page. It's treason. There's a Caesar in Rome, and you're calling me the Caesar. So you're a traitor to Rome. I mean, and if indeed I am the king, my loss is like that. Where were you? If I was king, you should have. Why'd you wait? So he says, clearly, this patient is pushing back. Who are you? Why are you here? You guys have been at war with me, and all of a sudden now you're pretending to respect me a little too much. Something's fishy. So he needs to so Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai needs to explain to him what's been going on inside Yerushalayim, and why the subtext of the conversation, why you shouldn't just shoot me on the spot, why you should trust me, why you should be willing to have a conversation with me. So he says, the Kamrusav Malkana. You claim that you're not the king, you are the king. Ilav Malka at Lamim Sirishalim Biyadach. He has a drashim, a series of psukim, that if you're going to succeed in conquering Shalim, you must be the king, Because Yeshayahu describes Livanon as falling in the hands of an adir, and he proves that right from a pasuk that adir is a reference to the king, Livanon is a reference to Beis HaMikdash. And you want to know why didn't that come up until now? The Ka'amrasi Malkana Amaylo Ka'asas Lagabayat Ha'idna? You want to know why didn't I show up until now? Bar Yoni Di'izban Lo Shabkinan. You have to understand that there's, you just see from the outside, you see a walled city, you're saying siege to a city. From the outside of this Vespasian, you see a monolithic city. And Yochum Zakeh says, you have to understand it's anything but monolithic. There's incredible dissension within the ranks, there's incredible machlok is going on within the city. And as he's saying, I would have come to Mechavad you earlier. As a matter of fact, as the Gemara told us, Yochum Zakeh and other Rabbanim, they wanted to do this long before. They want to come out and negotiate with the Romans, or to just passively negotiate by just weighing it out. But we have Bar Yoni that we're grappling with, and that's why it couldn't come out earlier. And he's, Vespasian is, again, he's nobody's fool, and he's not taking the city down. He says, really? That's, talk is cheap, he says. Amar Lei, Ilu Chavish Al Dvash V'Drakon, if you had a barrel of honey, but there's some sort of snake wrapped around it, wouldn't you take a bat and try to hit and kill the snake, even if it means destroying the barrel of honey? Wouldn't you do something? So why didn't you burn down the wall? Why didn't you attack them? Why didn't you do something? Rashi says, you should have broken through the wall and thrown the Bar Yonah out. And he had no response. Ishtak. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was at a loss for words. And Kari Leila Rav Yosef, Itim Rav Akiva, and two generations, or perhaps six, seven generations later, either Rav Yosef the Amora or Rav Akiva the Tana, who was a student of Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua, they commented on this story when they told over the story of Yochanan Zakkai, Meshi Chachal Machar V'daitim Yiskal. They referenced that pasuk in Yeshayahu. This is a situation when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had taken the Chachma from a Chacham. It is something he could have said, and Rabbi Shalom blocked him. Yibayla L'meimah Shaklin Tzavzer Shaklin L'Drakam V'Kavdin L'Lay V'Chavisa Shavkin L'Lay. The response to his mashal is neither do you just let the snake slither around your house, nor do you take a bat and whack at the snake and destroy, endanger the barrel of honey also. You do it surgically. Chakli and Sapsi, you take a pair of tongs and you grab the snake and you move the snake to a safer place and then you hit him over the head. You don't hit. There's a middle path between the two extremes of, on the one hand, passivity, and on the other hand, blind wanton action. There could be surgical action. And Rav Yochanan could have explained, that's what I'm doing. To do nothing, I don't want to do, but the alternative is not to just take a bat and swing at the Bar Yonah. That just would have destroyed things more. I carefully, delicately left the town to talk to you. But then at that moment, the first white line, at that moment, the messenger comes from Rome, and he says, Kum demisla Caesar, you were just appointed. The Caesar, the present Caesar, died. The Amri Hanahu Hashivi de Romi, the Hashuvim of Rome, presumably a reference to the Senate. Roman says, Decide, O Sivak Beresha, you are now Caesar. And now all of a sudden he realizes that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was onto something. Then Gemara tells a story, all of a sudden he can't get his shoe on, can't get the shoe off, can't figure out what's going on. And Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai explains to him, that's a pasuk, also a pasuk in Mishlei. Shmua tova tidshanetza. That the pasuk in Mishlei indicates sometimes people's bodies swell from good news. It says if you hear some bad news, that's why you can't get the shoe that's ready on off. Can't get the shoe that's not yet on, because your feet swell from the good news. It says if you see someone you don't like, that'll cause the swelling to go down. And then he asks for advice. Then he asks, excuse me, then he asks him to know what he wants. Now you're in good shape. Right? Up until now, he didn't really trust Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Everything seemed a little off, and you were claiming that. But suddenly now he sees, you're calling me the king, and I just became king. Okay, so maybe I should have a little respect for you. So with that, he says to him now, he says, look, I'm leaving. He says, but tell me again. Now I see that you are smart. Now for the chakmis to kuliyai, I see that you are so smart. Ad idna my law sees lugaboy. Why didn't you come up until now? He says, didn't I tell you? I told you the Baryoni didn't let us out. Well, I told you that I didn't think that made a whole lot of sense. And Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai still doesn't have a response, but he says, look, I'm leaving. We're going to send someone else. Maybe I'll send someone else. But the Churban is going to go on, but you can make some requests. And he requests three things. Shushil to the Rabban Gamliel, and Asvasa the Maschin Leila Rabbi Tzadok. It says three things. He wants Sanhedrin to process. He says, allow the Sanhedrin to move to Yavne, allow the Chacham to survive. And allow the line of Rabban Gamliel to survive. The line of Rabban Gamliel, it seems like at the moment Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was temporarily the Nasi. From Hillel and on, Hillel had been the Rebbe of Yochanan Zakkai. Hillel and on, the line of Nesiim, all the way through for the rest of the history of the Sanhedrin, all the way until the middle of the period of the Amoraim, the last Nasi Sanhedrin would be Hillel HaSheni, named for the great-great-great-great-grandfather. But from Hillel and on, with the exception of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, all the Nesiim were in the line of Hillel, which was ultimately the line of David HaMelech. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai probably took over because Rabbi Gamliel passed away. Rabbi Gamliel had probably been killed in the lead-up to the... In the run-up to Churban Bayis, Rabban Shimon. His son, Rabban Gamliel, was at that point too young to take over, most likely. And that's why Rabban Yochanan Zakkai, temporarily, sort of the interim acting Nasi. Later on in Yavne, Rabban Gamliel would take over. He'll be the Rabban Gamliel, the next generation, who's going to be the Nasi when Rabbi Yehoshua, student of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, is Yavne. Based on all those episodes in Yavne, they're going to take place in the next generation. He says, no one allowed the Sanhedrin to continue to survive up in the Galil, and Yav is going to have to leave Yerushalayim. Number two, allow the line Rabban Gamliel to survive. And number three, sort of closing the story from before, a doctor to heal Rabbi Tzadok. And once again, we have a second comment of Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva. Once again, Meshach Chacham, a hard died to me a skull. He should have asked for Beis HaMikdash. He asks you, what do you want? Why do you ask him Sanhedrin? Ask your base on Mikdash. But the Gemara explained, Yochanan Zakkai was thinking. He wasn't sure that would work. And he was worried he would bite up more than he should get nothing. He'll be tafasta merubalo tafasta. You ask for too much, you may get zero. This way, at least, it'll be a hatzala porto. At least, there'll be a hatzala porto. The story of Yochanan Zakkai, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, the president of YU, he joined us in Beit Meir a couple of days ago, on Wednesday afternoon. So he mentioned, I believe, the name of the Maariv Chayes. The Gemara Brachas tells of the death, the final hours of Yochanan Zakkai's life. And he's on his deathbed. And at one point, Tamim see he looks incredibly frightened. They say, Rebbe, why are you frightened? And he says, I see two paths in front of me. One to Gan Eden, one to Gehenim, and I don't know the Ezem Olichonosi. I don't know which path they're going to lead me down. So Maariv Chayes said that it could be that to his last day he was tortured by this decision that he made. He wasn't sure. You make the right decision. Can you imagine that? He wasn't sure if the rest of his life, could I have saved the Beis HaMikdash? I'm trying to think about the type of guilt that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was carrying.
But he had been admitted to Vespasian that they weren't in control, so to speak, of Yerushalayim.
Right.
And in other words, even if Vespasian pulled away, it was still complete.
That's a good point. Yeah. Right. That is a very good point. Vespasian leaving, or alternatively, not leaving, but destroying Yerushalayim but allowing, or subjugating Yerushalayim but allowing the Beis HaMikdash to stand, and the Beis HaMikdash might not have stood much anyhow. Yeah, and Rabbi Berman also pointed out, when you think about what the Gemara is driving at for us, like we said before, that these the Gemara is telling us these stories not only for their historical interest, the Gemara is telling these stories because we're supposed to learn something. So certainly one thing we're meant to learn from these stories is the incredibly caustic, destructive impact of Sinas Chinam, both on a personal level, as with Kamsa Bar Kamsa, and on a national and a group level. You see what groups fighting can do. The most absurd, irrational things. And they're so blinded. The Bar Yoni were so blinded by their hatred and so blinded by their, like, they were convinced that they were right. They would do the most absurd things because of the cause. They were so sold on their ism, their Bar Yoni-ism, that they were doing what were utterly counterproductive, utterly destructive, utterly hurting the people they claimed to represent in the worst way possible. And then also to think about the hero, the thing of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. And to think about the way which Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, so Michael, you mentioned before, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is one of the people who's able to see things as they are. Right? Bayone are missing the boat, and the Rabbanim see things clearly. Marta Barbaisos, Basbaisos versus Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. And there's something else also. You think about, you know, the end of the previous piece of the Gemara, the end of the episode of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, was that the animal comes to Beis HaMikdash and Mishar Ben Avkulas doesn't allow the Rabbanim to do anything. Doesn't allow them to bring the carbon, doesn't allow them to withhold Bar Kamsa. No, we can't refuse to make a decision. And the Gemara says, "An v'sanuso shabutar mevkulas, destroy the Beis HaMikdash." And according to the most mefarshim, that is not a positive statement. According to the most mefarshim, that is a stinging critique. We don't know much about Rabbi Yochanan ben Avkulas other than this story. And then you think about, there's another, think about Rabbi Yochanan ben Avkulas, the first named rabbinic figure, versus Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And think of also Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai versus his relative. This is fascinating. And what does Abba Sakra say to his uncle?
There's nothing I can do.
They'll kill me. I'm not in charge. I don't know. I throw up my hands. In other words, essentially, uncle, you're right. You're right. What we're doing is absurd. We're destroying our own people. I wish I knew what to do. It's supposed to be Yochanan Zakkai, who, as the Gemara says, was not able to pull off everything he wished he could pull off. And he didn't have all the answers, literally didn't have all the answers. Sometimes this patient called him on something, and Rabbi Shlom took away his chachma. He wasn't able to answer. But, at the same time, what he did accomplish, he accomplished what he had set out to accomplish. He had said, let me out so I can do Hatzal Purta. I can save something. And indeed he did. It wasn't just something. Think about the Masora of Kal Yisrael. Was saved by Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, the Tanam and Amoraim as we know them, when we think about the Chachmei HaMishnah, it begins in the generation after Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. 95% or more of the name statements in Mishnayos are post Rabbi Yochanan that begin with his Talmidim. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva, the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and on. All the Chachmei HaGemara, all because of Ten Liyavne Chachameha, and the Yichus of Rav Gamil. It was saved, the Sanhedrin and the Masorah of Torah, the Mishnayos and the Gemara, everything that followed was saved by Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. It's quite a Hatzalah Porta. True, he did not save the Beis HaMikdash, and it's not clear whether he could have. Counterfactual history, we'll never really know. But what he accomplished was extraordinary. And it began with an ability to make a decision. He was ready to try. his Chayav ben Avkulas, just everything was paralyzed. We can't do this, we can't do that, we just can't. Abba Sakura said, yeah, I wish I could. I know what to do. I can't. And he wasn't willing to try. But the point Zakai said, let's have at it. We're going to make it happen. We're making it happen. We'll have a conversation. We'll see where it goes. And that capacity to not be paralyzed is perhaps also the second major lesson. The second major lesson that past the end of Chumash Devarim, maybe we'll close with this. Reina Saita Fenecha Yom is Achaim is Atov is Mav is Sarah. Rabbi Shalom tells Kali Shalom through Moshe Rabbeinu, give me two choices. Chaim and Tov on the one hand, Mav is Sarah on the other hand. Okay. The Pasi, you would think the Pasi would end there. Notice that there's a good option and there's a bad option. One option is life and the other option is death and evil. Uvacharta v'chaim, you should choose life. Well, obviously, it seems like a very anticlimactic anticlimactic and totally redundant. So Berman suggested the stress is not in v'chaim. The stress is uvacharta. I'm giving you options. Don't just freeze. Uvacharta v'chaim. You're going to have to, there comes a time in the life of a Jew when you have to be active, when it's easier to just coast. It's often easier to just coast along, and you have to. You can't be Abba Sakura. In many senses, you can't be Abba Sakura. But not only in terms of the evil that he did do, but also in his inability to act. You got to be Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and that's the gzeira against Beis HaMikdash was already, that die was cast. But Klal Yisrael was saved. You see, not only in the beginning of the last paragraph of Rosh Hashanah, with his takanos post mikdash, the Klal Yisrael was saved because Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was willing to act. And that's what we need to do. We were talking before, we sit on the ground and we say kinos. And the kinos begin with expressing our tzar and giving words to the unspeakable, giving words to the tzar that we undergo, giving words to the bewilderment that we feel. And it moves on to Tziduk Adin, to recognition, particularly in the third parak of Eicha, that Tzad, and it's already in the first parak, Tzadiku Hashem Kepiyu Marisi, that we're bewildered, we don't necessarily understand what's happening, why it's happening, but we recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu is just. But then, in parak Gimel, in parak of Eicha, we move to Hashiveinu Hashem Elechem and Hashuva, that we need to act, and we need to, Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of his business, you take care of our prisoners. Every Tanis, Rambam says, is a focus on tshuva, and a focus on change, and a focus on making real cheshbon nefesh. The Rabbi Willig told us in Moreh Shakol many, many years ago, he thought that Sifrei Musar definitely mutter to learn on Tisha B'Av, because the main work of Tisha B'Av is to do tshuva. The main work of Tisha B'Av is, in a certain sense, to tap into one's inner Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and be willing to act, be willing to look at where my life is at, and I need to make a move, I need to make change, I need to not just be passive. It comes a time when Jew needs to be active. And the road to personal geula and the road to geulas Klal Yisrael lies in the willingness to think things through and then to take proper action. We should talk to Bizochen. Next year, you should be sitting on chairs, but not in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, no one sits on a chair except for a Malchim Malchim Beis David. You should zoch to wake up in the morning and sit on chairs and walk to Beis HaMikdash and to see the Malchim Malchim Beis David sitting in the Azara as we join together for Karbanos Mitzvah next year in Yerushalayim.